Welcome to In the Hive, a show that looks at the issues and ideas that tie the Greater Salt Lake Valley together. I'm host and producer Emily Means, and today we're talking about people who have made Utah their home as refugees. Data from the U.S. State Department show that from October 1st of 2016 to July 21st, 2017, 50,334 individuals were accepted to the United States as refugees, slightly exceeding the 50,000 cap set in place by President Donald Trump's executive order restricting refugees from entering the country. Over the years, the state of Utah has resettled about 65,000 refugees. This year, as a result of policy set at the national level, the number of new refugee arrivals to the state is at a standstill. By late June, the state had received 725 of the 1,200 annual average they have the capacity to serve. But Utah is still a place where refugees are building a new life. On July 15th, 13 people from Bhutan, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Burma, Cambodia, Central African Republic, Eritrea, Iran, Iraq, Laos, and Somalia took the United States of America oath of citizenship as part of the 13th annual World Refugee Day Festival at Salt Lake City's Liberty Park. The event is a celebration of diversity, and it's a way for newly arrived Americans to become friends with local Utahns. KCPW producer Ross Chambliss attended the World Refugee Day event and provided this report.
Are you excited to be as U.S. citizens? All right.
On this hot July morning, friends, family, and onlookers have gathered around a stage in Salt Lake City's Liberty Park to see these refugees become new Americans.
That I will support.
And defend.
The Constitution.
And the laws.
Of the United States of America.
The ceremony is over and the party begins. It's a global marketplace. There are food tents, games, tabling nonprofits, and tents for different ethnic communities. There's close to 3,000 people here.
So our staff works all year with a lot of partners to make this event happen. As you can see, it's just a huge undertaking. My name is Asha Parekh, and I'm the director of the Refugee Services Office for the Department of Workforce Services. So I think this is the fourth year that we've had the event at Liberty Park, and we've had it in other locations in a smaller format. I would say, it just on the simplest level, if you think about people who have lost everything, their homes, some of their family members, their friends, their communities, and then they're coming here. They're living in tents in some refugee camps, and then they come to Utah, and they are so happy to be here, and they're willing to work hard and try to, you know, start over and make a life. And my favorite thing is just talking to people about how grateful they are that we are helping them make this place their home. So their perspective about life is so different. And I think the lessons are that people who have experienced challenges and struggles have a lot to teach us. And we forget because we've got so much. We take it for granted and we miss the real lesson. So.
In the crowd, I find a well-dressed man with a beard. He just became a citizen.
My name is Shaheen Ahmed. I'm from Iraq, Baghdad. Oh, I left from Iraq in 2010, and then I applied at the UN in Turkey, and it took me for like about a year to become a refugee. And then I arrived here at February 2011, and I got through a process to become a refugee, like through interviews and background check and all that. It's dangerous over there. It's hard to get, you know, a lot of jobs in a lot of cities. It's dangerous to get, it's like hard to get some cities like water, power. Like when I was back home, we had 3 generators just to get power because of the bombing and the terrorists going on. So what's here, it's freedom. And like I told, there's a lot of opportunities. So no matter how old you are, you can go back to school and study and you know, get the degree you want.
There's a tent for the Somalian community with some trinkets on a table. A young girl wearing a colorful hijab helps her mother explain.
Okay, this, what's it called?
Deal.
So this is deal. They use it for like weddings to put as decorations for if they're getting married.
Oh.
And this one, it's for camels, so they put it around the camel's neck, so they will know if a camel's coming. Yeah, it's like a bell. Yeah.
So actually, I'm not the best at speaking Somali. I can understand it a lot, but it's since I'm around English so much, and like my school, you speak English like everywhere, and the marketplace, you speak English. You can really quickly forget your language, and that's something like I'm like sad about. I shouldn't have forgotten it, but I'll hopefully like pick it up again and learn it again. My name is Saida Dahir. Since there was a civil war in Somalia, my family needed to relocate somewhere. So we all moved to Kenya and we lived in a refugee camp. I was actually born in that refugee camp. And in 2003, when I was 3 years old, we finally got accepted to come to the United States, and I've been here ever since. I don't really have memories that like are distinct, but like I can remember some things, like the plane ride, like things like that I can remember.
So what has been your experience growing up here in Salt Lake?
So growing up here, it was completely different. When I was in like my church settings, I felt like home. There were so many Somali people, so many Muslim people. But then when we'd go to school, it was like I was out of place and things like that. So it took a lot of time to find where I belonged in the middle, because I was American, but I was Somali at the same time. So it's hard to find the middle ground. And since I was so young, I had to adapt really quickly. And it was basically my whole life has been here, so that's all I knew. So it was really hard balancing the two cultures, like being American and being Somali, but I figured out a way to blend them together.
One tent over is a Syrian community tent and a man in a wheelchair.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Well, how long have you been in Utah?
I and my family in Utah, 1 year and 3 months.
And you came from Syria?
Yeah, from Syria, yes.
What was your experience like leaving Syria, coming here?
Another man translates for him.
So we left Syria because it's a war zone and it's been going on for 7 years.
How did you leave? Did you go through different countries like Turkey or other places just to come here?
I live in Jordan Kingdom in camp 3 years. Refugee 3 years in Jordan, yes.
What is your impression of life here in Utah?
شو انطباعك عن الحياة بيوتا؟
والله يعني أنا ما كان عندي فكرة مسبقة عن الشعب الأمريكي كليا وعن الشعب بيوتا خاص.
I haven't had any previous knowledge or experience of the American people in general and in Utah in particular.
بس بعد ما اجيت لهون يعني كانت الناس يعني ثقافة أمريكا ثقافة رائعة، ثقافة المحبة وثقافة الألفة والاحتضان.
So what I found out is the culture, the American culture is a wonderful culture. It's a culture of love and acceptance and integration.
Yes, okay. What are things? Is there anything that you miss from back home that you wish you had here?
الحقيقة أنا مشتاق لأمي ولعائلتي. بتمنى تكون أمي معي. وكل الذكريات اللي من 7 سنين فقدتها بتوقع ما تتعوض.
So I do miss my mother and my family. In particular, I would love for my mother to be here with me and all the memories I've left behind.
What is something that you wish more people, the general mainstream community here in Utah, understood about your experience or about Syria in general?
ما بيختلف ابدا عن بقية شعوب العالم. شعب محب للسلام. محب لكل الناس ما عنده أي نزعات طائفية.
I want them to know that the Syrian people are just like everybody else. They're a good people that love peace and they love each other and they don't have any sectarian prejudice, so to speak.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Sure. Thank you. Nearby, an older man with a safari pith helmet says hello.
It's well known, and for good reason, Utah is a welcoming state. People are generally open to refugees. They're generally very supportive. And we have one of the best resettlement programs in the country, according to our federal partners. There are still ways that we can make it better, and we're working hard to do that. But Utah's a good place to be if you're a refugee. Yeah, I'm Gerald Brown. I'm the state refugee coordinator for Utah. But jobs are very important. It's good to be able to pay your rent. But it's equally important for refugees to make friends with people from the mainstream community. And that's why the welcoming community or the mainstream has such a critical role here. So unless the mainstream reaches out and, you know, accepts refugees and values them and makes friends with them, this whole great opportunity won't work so well. So it's really key.
What have you seen or observed that is the best way to help the general mainstream community connect with refugees?
Well, I think the easiest thing to do is to volunteer, and there are several ways to do that. One way is through the Salt Lake City Mayor's Office, Know Your Neighbor. You can also volunteer to help newly arrived refugees with their resettlement agencies, Catholic Community Services, the International Rescue Committee. But once you sign up to volunteer, then you start learning things about refugees, you become educated, and you're connected in some way. So I think just applying to be a volunteer is the easiest way.
This is In the Hive. I'm your host, Emily Means, and today on the show, we're looking at the experience of refugees in Utah. Who are Utah's refugees, and what do they do when they get here? I spoke with Refugee Services Director Asha Parekh at the Department of Workforce Services about the common path to refugee resettlement in Utah.
Utah has about 1,200 refugees that come every year that work with resettlement agencies. So the way that the state numbers are set is through the State Department. They determine, we work with them to determine what's our high limit, and we believe that that's a good number for us based on the size of our population. So it compares to other states in that we're a smaller state, and so we have smaller numbers.
From what countries do most of Utah's refugees come?
They come from about 20 different countries. I think our largest populations are probably Sudanese, South Sudanese, Somali, and Congolese.
Maybe you can also help us define what a refugee is. I'm sure there's like a very proper legal definition.
Yeah, I think what people need to know is just that a refugee is someone who is fleeing persecution in their home state, and that if they were to return back, they would be afraid for their lives. So they're people who cannot go back to the place that they called home. It's no longer safe for them, and they go through a very long screening process to be able to come to the U.S.
So they're looking for a new home, and they've found one here in Utah. What are some of the neighborhoods that they often live in?
So I think one thing, Emily, that people, it would be helpful for them to know is that refugees don't choose where they go. They get assigned to the country that they're going to be resettling in. And of course, people who get assigned to America are always very happy because it's one of the best places that refugees want to go. So they often feel like they've won the lottery when they get assigned to Utah.
How is that decision made then? I mean, America. I guess, is it kind of like a lottery between countries?
Yeah, it's not. Basically, the refugee doesn't have a voice in that process. The U.S. will go through this screening process and then determine out of those people who they will accept. So it's based on what the country that's accepting the refugee feels is the right fit for them.
So in Utah, I kind of assume we have a lot of refugees on the west side of Salt Lake, or that's where the population is mostly concentrated?
So we actually, I think South Salt Lake probably has the highest number of refugees, and also Salt Lake City. And I mean, one of the things that we've done is open in collaboration with Salt Lake Community College and Utah State University, a education and training center in South Salt Lake, because it's the most easily accessible location for refugees. So that's definitely where there's a large population. I don't know if people are familiar with Bud Bailey. It's a housing authority housing complex that's very close to the education and training center. Sunnyvale, which is also a complex that's it's a community center that is run by the Asian Association and has lots of refugee apartments surrounding it, is also not very far. So those are two sort of large places where refugees live.
So you were talking about a training facility. What happens there, like teaching them to speak English, or what are some of those barriers that they can overcome at the training center?
So the most challenging barrier for refugees often is English. It impacts their ability to get higher-paying jobs. And so we have lots of English training opportunities for people. We do have some in partnership with the English Skills Learning Center at the training center, at the Education and Training Center, but English is offered in many different locations. What we're working towards is offering occupational English so that we can start to identify which occupations would offer refugees access to higher-paying jobs, and then get them that short-term training to access those higher-paying jobs so that they're well-positioned to make a living wage. And, you know, the center's pretty new. We've started out with doing this with warehousing. We were able to help refugees go from about $10 an hour to $14 an hour on average, those who went through that training. So we're very excited about short-term training because we think it's the best way to access a living wage.
So talking about employment, of course, refugees have been kind of at the forefront of the news this year with President Trump's refugee restrictions. I'm wondering how the DWS anticipates those restrictions will affect Utah's refugee population and also Utah's economy.
Well, so we've had about 725 refugees entered this year, this fiscal year. And so we anticipate, obviously, because of the refugee ban for 120 days, that we won't reach our numbers of 1,200 for this year. But we have, you know, we can't say what those numbers will be by the end of the fiscal year, because refugees who have a relationship with a family member in Utah will still be able to enter despite the ban. So we're hopeful that, you know, we'll have some higher numbers. Our goal, because the Refugee Services Office is located within the Department of Workforce Services, and as you know, Workforce Services is the employment arm of the state, we have a very employment-focused program in terms of supporting refugees. So we work closely with our with resettlement agencies to provide employment support for refugees, and we're just excited to continue to do that. We have some unique things in our state, such as two-year case management. We contract with resettlement agencies to provide some basic support for refugees for the first 2 years to make sure that they have all of the basic needs taken care of, and they learn some of the basic skills to become self-sufficient within that two-year period. That's very different than many other states. They might provide 90 days of support, and then they don't provide additional support for refugees. The other unique program we have that's employment-based is a partnership with the Department of Workforce Services and the LDS Church. It's based out of the Humanitarian Center, and it's an employment and English program. So we support refugees to learn English and learn some basic job skills, where they go for 8 hours a day. They're learning English for 4 of those hours and learning those job skills the other 4, so that once they graduate from that program, they will be able to get a job.
While language can be a barrier refugees face, some refugees also struggle with finding ingredients to their traditional family recipes. The Sunnyvale Farmers Market on the southwest side of Salt Lake City provides residents with fresh produce that reminds them of home, such as pumpkin leaves, amaranth, and at least 3 different types of eggplant. The fruits and veggies are harvested by refugee growers at the New Roots Farm, hosted by the International Rescue Committee. The market opens at noon on Saturday, and market goers line up, ready to rush the baskets of produce for just the right thing to complete dinner that night.
I was born in Bhutan and raised in Nepal, and my name is Hem Sanyasi. When we were new over here, it was not really easy to get everything, like the pumpkin soup. We're really used to, we call Porshigo Munta right here. So it is really easy to get over here. And also, just like we get, what do you call, loka. We call loka, and also we get pretty much everything what we used to get in back home. So this farm market is making easy to access us and get from here. So it is really fresh and really good. I love this place, and I love, it is really to get everything what we want. Usually we don't get this kind of vegetables in every market over here. And this farmer market is helping us to just get what we like. And they are trying to grow over here in our community, and they are helping us to get seeds, everything. They're finding seeds from different places. They're bringing some from California, I know that. And they're really working hard for us. There are a lot of farmer market around here, but these vegetables are grown by our community people, especially from Putnese. And also, we can find what we get, I mean, what we used to get in back home. So these are grown by our community people. So it is really, really easy to get everything what we want.
Did you, your family, or friends come to Utah as a refugee? What kind of struggles have you had moving to a new home, and how did you overcome them? Weigh in at the In the Hive podcast link posted on KCPW's Facebook page, KCPW 88.3, or feel free to email us at comments@kcpw.org with your feedback and questions. Next week on the show, In the Hive is taking a look at some local places gone by, and in particular, the legacy of a Salt Lake City restaurant, Lamb's Grill Cafe. We're also looking for your stories of places gone by. What was your favorite spot for an after-work drink that was maybe replaced by something new? What memories did you have of Lamb's before it closed its doors? Did your go-to taco cart up and move before you had a chance to say goodbye? Message us on Facebook and we'll reach out to you for your story. Thanks to the KCPW team for their support of this show. And thank you for tuning in. You can find podcasts of this program on our website, kcpw.org. Up next is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Emily Means. Thanks for listening.